to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
On the show today, we have the fabulous team back from Barfoot and Thompson, Te Aritu, to chat all things West Auckland. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome to December, another month rolled by already. This is our final Property Matters for 2024, and we've brought in a fabulous couple of guests and a returnee. Welcome back, Tony.
Hi, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for being here. And Tony is the branch manager at Barfoot and Thompson Te Aritu. And what's been happening since we last caught up?
Well, to start with, I've got hay fever, so I just wanted
to be sneezing on air.
I just want to say to the listeners, if I sound a bit nasally, sorry about that. I'm just a little bit blocked up at the moment.
How's 2024 been?
It's been a pretty tough year, to be honest. It's been another grindy year. I think, you know, since the, you know, those crazy highs of, you know, after COVID, when everyone was wanting to buy property, we've effectively seen almost 3 years of just a gradual sliding market, and this year didn't really see too much different. No falling off a cliff stuff, but just an easing back of the market as we've had those high interest rates, the inflation and the high cost of living and people's, you know, job security concerns and all that sort of thing. But the good news is we are starting to feel like we're coming out, finally, at the other end of that.
There's a bit of sun in that sunshine.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So as a leader, I mean, the last few weeks we took a little deviation from investment and we spoke to leadership coaches about, a lot of investors are business managers, etc. And we looked at how they lead their team. How have you had to lead your team knowing that it's a tough year when I guess a whole part of your team is on commission base?
Correct.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's been a huge consideration, not just for myself, but I guess for any manager of a real estate business and many other businesses as well. Just being really conscious of the challenge that our salespeople are facing who aren't on salary.
Yeah.
With that downturn in the housing market, obviously their commissions have been severely impacted. So I've really felt like my role has been a lot more about supporting them, being conscious of the pressure they're under, being connected, hearing and finding out, you know, if people are under particular stress. Obviously, I can't just solve the problem by giving them a lotto win or anything. But I think just being aware of the pressures that it creates at home, and just their own feeling of being professional. Everyone likes to be succeeding, and it's hard when you're not.
Yeah, totally.
And just, I guess, them realising that it's often not because of any lack of professionalism or effort on their part. There's just a really tough environment they're working within. Yeah.
I guess it's even harder on new salespeople that haven't built their brand yet. Yeah.
Really tough. It's hard to get into real estate at the best of times, but when the market's extremely quiet, that's probably when our more senior, more experienced agents are really taking what work there is there.
Although I remember someone saying to me, I think on this show, you know, if you can come in a hard market, the only way is up. And if you can survive this, it prepares you for the fact that sometimes there will be downturns.
Yeah, I've been telling myself that in the mirror. I don't know if I could have picked a more challenging time to become a manager of a real estate business than the 24 years.
Yeah.
My feeling's very much like that. If I can survive this and we do all right, then it can only get better
for me.
But
it'd be quite nice to have that. Yeah. All right. And Danielle, you are the new head of property management for Te Aritu. So we've had Daniel in here with you a few times, Tony. Daniel to Danielle, that's easy to remember. And Danielle and I know each other from a long, long time ago. And you're lucky it's radio because I can't embarrass you with any photos. But I used to teach you when you were back in primary and intermediate days.
Absolutely through the wonderful Kids for Drama, and that's probably why I am the person I am today. Well, part of the reason, because I grew very confident through that, and I think that's really important when being a property manager,
of course,
and being a people person too.
So. Absolutely. So tell us, what did you do before coming to Barfoot and Thompson and before coming into real estate?
Sure. So I've done a few different things. I started off being a teacher aide, actually, for a little bit, and then decided I wanted to do vet nursing. Which is entirely different. But, you know, you're either usually a people person or an animal lover, but I'm both. And while I loved vet nursing, there came a time where I needed to think of my family and what was right for us at the time. And my old best friend, Vicky Harlick, from the head of department, Henderson, I was having a chat with her and she recommended I get into property management because she knows I'm a people person and thought I'd do really good at it. So,
and did you start at the Te Aroha branch or at a different branch? You did. So what was your first role in there?
Property management assistant. Mm-hmm. So I started in 2019, fresh off the boat, obviously, coming from vet nursing, but I'm very much a hands-on learner, so everything in practicum, really, yeah. I thrive with. So right from the day dot, though, I had my eyes on a head of department role and strived towards that, and with our company, I had the help along the way to get me here.
So you became a property manager in the middle? Between assistant and head?
Exactly. Yep. So I went from property management assistant for a year, then into portfolio manager, then senior property manager for 2 years, and then now head of department.
You're kind of that perfect career journey, really, isn't it? Come in and work your way up. How cool is that, Tony? Yeah, someone that's sort of grown up in your own branch.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think Danielle's a poster child for you know what you can do. With our company, we very much, as a company, Barford & Thompson, promotes succession and progression and letting people become the best professional they can be. And wonderful to see that Danielle's done that all within one branch.
She's come
in at very much entry level and is now running the team there. And when I started there 2 years ago, or just over 2 years ago as a manager, she made it very clear to me quite early in the piece that she wanted to be a head of property. So I've known that she's had aspiration from my very earliest connections with her, and was so happy to be able to offer her that opportunity just a short time ago, and she's really thriving in the role.
But how cool is it as a manager to have someone who is that clear, because then you can focus training on them and their time comes to work out?
Yeah. I mean, it just gives you a huge amount of confidence to give someone a position that you know well and you've seen excelling in the previous role. I had every confidence that Danielle was going to step up to the mark and be a not just another head of property, but an exceptionally good one, and I've got full confidence.
So how's the first few months gone? Any surprises? Is it exactly what you thought it would be?
There's definitely been some surprises, I think there is with any new role, I guess. And not only have I stepped into a new role, we have a new member of staff that obviously went into my previous role. So, we're all just learning how to gel together. This year is very much getting, you know, the team up to speed. Yeah. And.
Because I guess being a property manager, you're used to tenants and landlords in that scenario, but as a head now, you've got to add staff into the mix.
Yeah. So right from the get-go, we've all been very open with each other, and I think that's really important. I've wanted the team to know that they can trust me. I'll do what I say I will do, and they can come to me if they need help or they feel like they might have a better way of doing things. I'm always open to trialing things if it appears like it may be a great idea. It's always good to take that on board and
try
things out. So that's what we're doing at the moment, and everyone seems very happy, which makes me happy.
So from a career point of view, what advice would you give a young Danielle sitting in this room that's listening, what advice would you give them to start this journey?
I would say, well, lucky for them, they have the opportunity to join their cadetship if they wanted to, whereas that wasn't around when I started. That would be a wise place to start, making sure that if they do get into property management, it would be great if they had people to tell them what it involves, you know, so it's not all daisies, because a lot of the time it isn't, you know, you're having
people think you're just out doing lovely viewings and showing people through the homes.
A realistic vision of it, but asking lots of questions, I think, is best, and asking to trial things and things like that.
Cool. Tony, what do you think, what are the skills or characteristics that make a good property manager or make a good salesperson? Because they are quite different roles, aren't they?
Yes, they are, although one thing that is similar is that as the professional, you're sitting in the middle of the transaction, whether it's buyer-seller or whether it's tenant and landlord. So it's being able to manage expectation and deliver service that that both sides of that equation feel that they're getting value out of you and professionalism out of you. So people skills are essential, whether or not you're in sales or whether you're in property management, because you are effectively dealing with people all the time. Real estate is not about selling homes. It's about forming relationships and trust and delivering service. The transaction of the selling of a home is just the end result of that. So some of those skills are really similar, just being able to listen well, understand people, see what their problems are, find solutions, and be very skilled at helping people solve problems. You are a problem solver, yeah.
There's so many real estate companies out there. What makes Buffett and Thompson stand out, do you think, for both? I'll go sales to Tony and property management to Danielle, especially in that customer service field, but why choose you?
Well, I can sort of answer that because I selected Buffett and Thompson as a salesperson. I could have worked at any of the other brands. But for me, when I did my research, I realised that the Barfoot model, which is the only non-franchised large real estate provider that there is, provides a unique advantage for our owners, for our sellers. We just have an incredible network, you know, which has got no boundaries. There's no franchise boundaries or zones or exclusive sales areas. We're just one big network that works collectively to deliver as many buyers to any one of our owners as possible. And that's unique. No other real estate agency does it that way. I came, as you know, Stephen, from a background in the fire service for 24 years. You and I have joked about this several times, gone from, you know, a profession that's, you know, usually rated number one or number two for trust and confidence by New Zealanders into real estate, which some would say is only one step above used car salespeople. So, sorry, no offence to those car salespeople listening out there. So, for me, the family ownership, the fact that we still have Buffetts and Thompsons sitting at the boardroom. And their values, I felt it as a salesperson and I feel it as a manager, they flow down through all the branches. So that highly ethical approach to real estate is so important to me personally, professionally. That was important to me, which is why I was so happy to align myself with this company.
Awesome. And Danielle, is it similar? What do you think makes Buffett and Thompson stand out from a customer point of view when it comes to property management? Because there's a lot of property management companies out there.
Sure. So with us, in addition to what Tony was saying about networking, that is a huge portion of why clients should choose us, because we're doing it currently at the moment with our vacant properties. We're playing Monopoly, you know, with our current tenants and or contacting other branches if we have a great tenant, because we want owners to have fantastic tenants as much as we do. We have our own in-house advisor, of course, for any legal backup that we may need. We also have our all-inclusive rate, where we don't charge extra for our routine inspections, any admin costs, advertising costs, letting fees. It's a really competitive rate. So a lot of our competitors don't offer that. They charge a lot of sneaky little extras. And a well-known brand and name.
I think, Tony, too, you've got somebody here who's been in your branch for years. That must be a selling point, because it is an industry where there is a lot of staff turnover. It's a tough, tough job.
Yeah.
But you've got somebody here who, you know, is Attitude's property manager.
Yeah, well, that was one of the interesting things, going back to what I was talking to you about before, where Danielle declared that she wanted to be a head of property. It wasn't just that she said that. She wanted to be the head of property at Attitude. She very much feels loyalty to the branch, to the area, to the team that are there. They all know her, trust her and respect her. So it was like, for her, it was an organic sort of transition almost, you know. It was like almost where she was destined to be. And you are right, you know, I think that loyalty and that commitment to our team, our business and our people, as in our clients, our owners, our tenants, is a really big thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's talk about the area you're in. So West Auckland, so Tony, and I should say for our listeners, because we have listeners from all over the country, Te Aritu is in West Auckland, kind of across the water, sort of on its own little space, isn't it? It's almost not an island, but there's sort of one road in and one road out, but it's right close to the motorway. It looks over the waterways, it looks over the city, it's got great views, it's a cool space. Where's the market at, both for West Auckland and Te Aratu now?
Well, first, I have to say I grew up in Te Aratu, so spent my first 22 years. I think Mum and Dad were glad to get rid of me when I finally went flatting. So it's very much somewhere I resonate with, as I do the whole sort of West Auckland. That quarter of Auckland is my home patch. So I've always loved West Auckland for all of its amenity. I think it's got amazing beaches and walkways and parks and communities, which is what I love, because that's what quality living is all about, is having that community around you with all those things that are easy to access, you know, for your family. Te Aratu Peninsula has gone through a massive transformation since the advent of the Auckland Unitary Plan. So we're seeing a lot more newer build homes there, whereas it was traditionally, you know, your bungalows on your quarter acre sections. So that's opened up the market to a lot more young people, which has also then rejuvenated the whole, I guess, the demographic of the area. We've now got cafes and the things that young people need, you know, that sort of, it's become a little bit more modern, I guess. So I'd love West Auckland. I think it's fabulous. And where we are has still got great access to the city, and yet you go in the reverse direction and you've still got pretty easy access to the Waitakere Ranges, West Coast beaches, mountain biking in the Woodhill Forest. You know, you're sort of really well located.
And now those back motorways are all sort of connected. I mean, you can head to the shore or further north easily.
Yeah, you almost, when you leave there, if you're going to the city, you can think, well, do I want to go... Or going south, do you want to go over the Greenhithe way and around that way, or go straight in and you get the traffic report, you pretty much make up your mind.
From an investment point of view, where do the prices sit out west? I mean, is this a good sort of return on investment, good average prices?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for the style of home that you would buy brand new, and let's just say we're just talking about new build sort of terrace style houses at the moment, they represent fabulous value for money if you were to compare that exact same build home in a more central suburb or even North Shore, should we say. So we certainly do have a lot of interest in our homes. We have quite a high percentage of investor buyers. You know, and it's because they know that those properties are going to be relatively easy to rent. There's good established schooling, as I say, all the established infrastructure around them for the community. So, yeah, we have, and Danielle's nodding her head looking at me. Yeah, we do. We have a lot of investor buyers, you know, with our housing stock in the area.
So, Danielle, what are tenants looking for? So if someone listening is an investor wanting to buy out west, what are tenants looking for? Was it still the 3-bedroom with a dishwasher and off-street parking?
Yes, so we still have a pool of tenants looking for the new builds, but obviously there are a lot of them on the market at the moment. They're all becoming available around the same time. So what we see is those that have a garage are preferred to those with just an off-street car park.
Right.
But either of those are preferable rather than the ones with no parking. So the parking can become a real issue. But the fact that there are quite a lot of townhouses on the market at the moment, we are seeing a lot of tenants really liking the standalone homes.
Okay.
Because they like to feel they have the privacy, they've got some backyard space for the kids and things like that. But garaging is definitely a preference.
Do you see a huge shift based on school zones? You know, like if you're in the Mount Albert Grammar Zone, you know, you can charge another $100 a week rent sort of thing. What's that like out west?
So on the peninsula, we see, because of the real community vibe, we have a lot of tenants that have been living there their whole lives, or they don't really want to move off the peninsula, but a lot currently go to the schools. So yes, they want to stay on the peninsula to be in the school zoning.
It's a good sign when people want to stay in an area.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the, you know, the parking, because we, you know, we've been drilled into us to use this public transport, etc. So we are building more and more things without car parks. But people still want their car. Our public transport isn't up there. And yes, it might get you to work, but it's not going to get you to the beach on the
Yeah, that's the issue.
You
know,
you can't get to Pihar easily from Te Aroha. So you still need that. That's really good feedback. You still need places with car parks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also gives the added, well, peace of mind that their car is off the street. Security purposes and things like that.
Are there any current trends you're seeing out west?
There is actually, and backing up to what Danielle was just talking about, I think back to when all of these sort of new build, you know, multi-unit terraces started to become delivered as a house typology. They were really popular because people like buying new, you know, many of them had 10-year guarantees, they've got the double glazing, all the insulation, but generally most of them do have pretty limited outdoor living. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a reversal of that, where tenants are actually, maybe have already lived that way for a few years, are saying, you know what, kind of wouldn't mind some grass for the kids to run around on, or the dog to have a bit more exercise space. So the traditional homes with a little, and it doesn't have to be a full site, you know, it could be a half site, but just as long as it's got a bit of outdoor amenity, they are proving to be very popular now with tenants, I think. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, Danielle, but I just think we're seeing a little bit of a pendulum come back towards that traditional living. There's tenants for every property, of course, but I just think, yeah, they are starting to prove to be quite popular now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the three-bedroom properties are preferable as well, because a lot of tenants are needing to work from home.
True.
And things like that. So even if it's a professional couple, they like to have an office space or a study nook of sorts. You know, two bedroom with a study nook can be preferred as well. Yep.
Have you had many investors this year sell their investment property because of this sort of times are tough?
Absolutely. Let's not beat around the bush there.
That's
those really high interest rates, the high cost of living have just put the squeeze on some investor owners so much. And it might be that they're not selling their only home. It might be that they own a few investment properties and they need to offload one of them or two of them to just ease the overall, you know, sort of stress on them. So we have noticed a bit of that, and that's been a bit of something that we've dealt with, and we've helped them sell them.
Yeah.
As we start approaching summer, what are some sort of tips and tricks? And let's go sales first.
Okay.
If you're thinking of getting your house ready and on the market, when is a good time? Should you be spending the whole of summer getting it ready, or is it, let's do some quick fixes and get it on?
Well, what I'd say is it's now that we're into December, it's certainly too late to be considering coming to the market now. If I was still a selling agent and someone approached me, I would definitely be talking to them about a plan for the new year.
Yep.
There is a bit of a runway before a property can get onto the market. So that actually worked quite well, because I think I'd be having the discussion around using some of that holiday season to do the preparation, you know, get their property looking smart. It could be that's time to do the water blasting, the stain, the decks, get all the gardens looking up to speed and give the house a wash and all the things you need to do so that you can come onto the market in the early year, sort of second half of January, looking sparkling, looking as good as it can be, ready to go for a summer campaign. Yeah.
Just mentioning gardens and maintenance there, Danielle, if it's an investment property, what do you suggest in that? Is it sort of just low maintenance, low level stuff, not having tenants needing to get gardeners in, etc.? What do you suggest?
So we do have a few that obviously have recurring lawn maintenance and things like that. Those would tick away. However, from a perspective of getting things done over the Christmas period, likewise what Tony was saying, if the tenants were, say, going away on holiday and the landlord then wanted to pop up and do some routine maintenance, like a house wash or something like that, it wouldn't be very disruptive. They can get those jobs done, you know, because the houses can get quite grubby after winter and things. So that would be the preferable time. Otherwise, hold fire until the new year if the tenants are in situ for the long Christmas break. Otherwise, that could be quite invasive.
Yeah, totally.
Just the other thing too, Stephen, sorry, just if someone was considering possibly preparing their house for sale now, I would say all the signs are looking pretty optimistic for a much more positive real estate market next year. So if owners have been sitting back thinking, oh, I just don't want to bring my property onto the market now, reading all the headlines, watching the news and feeling like it's not a great time, there's a definite shift in that sentiment around that. So I would say this is, if you've been sitting back and waiting, this is the time to get prepped and get ready to go, and then talk to a Buffett and Thompson agent in the new year about timing around that. But the summer season is a great time to market homes.
You mentioned tenants going away, Danielle. What can they be doing to sort of look after, I guess, the investment property that they're, I mean, they're renting, but it's gifted to them. It's uh-huh. somebody else's property. What can they do, like, security-wise and things over that break?
Sure. So they could do things like turning off the water main or something like that, or even
great.
The hot water cylinder.
Stop the leaks as
exactly,
well. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. we all know that those can go at any time sometimes and can pose a big issue. Having, you know, their valuables hidden, maybe letting neighbours know that they're going away, just because there can be some opportunists out there, increased criminal activity over the holiday period because people know everyone tends to go away. Mm. So making it seem like they are home, yet they're not home. So even a car in the driveway, and that goes for landlords too with a vacant property, just ensuring security's up to date, all windows and doors are locked.
Yeah,
those
great
things.
Idea.
Yeah.
If you've got a spare car, pop it on your on the front driveway.
Exactly,
yeah.
Or a neighbour's car if you're really
yep.
close.
Yeah, great.
Things like that.
Cool. What advice do you have for first-time investors? You know, if they're looking at buying out west, is there sort of tips and tricks, Tony, for looking at purchasing their first home?
Well, the first thing I'd say is get really good professional help. You know, don't try and I guess, understand everything yourself. You know, yep. there are professionals out there. For example, engage with an excellent mortgage broker, someone that can show them the options around their finance. What are they, you know, what's their lending ability? You can't really shop for a home unless you know, how much you've got to spend. But there's also many different ways of structuring finance that can be a lot more advantageous, you know, for a, an investor buyer. Effectively, this is a business purchase you're making, so you want to maximise the business advantages. Solicitors as well, you know, getting, just having those, you know, those really important professionals on board, get some research, get linked up with them so that if and when you see the property you think you might like, you're kind of ready to go and you know what the next step is and who those professional support people are going to be.
What sort of reports do you think, you know, should we be getting building report, or when, I guess, is the question. If you're looking at purchasing a property, when should you get things like a building report done?
Oh, look, I would recommend a building report be done on any purchase of a home, even if it's a new build. It's a lot of money you're investing.
Yeah.
Why would you risk buying something that may have issues for the sake of, you know, $1,000 when you're spending, you know, $800,000 or $900,000 or whatever it might be? So the good thing is you can make an offer to purchase a home and get into that contract to buy it with one of your conditions being for a builder's report. So you don't have to outlay the money not knowing if your offer is going to be accepted. You negotiate, get your offer accepted with a condition that it's has to be subject to a builder's report to your satisfaction. So whether it's a new build or an older home, I would highly recommend, yeah, a buyer goes down that route for their own protection.
What other tips and tricks do you have for whether it's an investment property or not, just people buying?
Oh, that's a really open-ended question. Well, I guess it all depends, you know, what it is that you're looking, why you're looking to buy. What's the purpose you're wanting to get out of this home? Is it for your own use, for your family? Is it for investment? If it's for investment, talk to people like Danielle. Find out what are tenants looking for in this area, you know. What would be a good style of property to purchase in this area that would be attractive from a rental perspective if you're an investor buyer? Obviously, your whole consideration is very different if you're buying for yourself, for your own family. But the main things are, I think, people will know what house they like, but make sure that you're doing careful checks. This is a huge investment. It's a huge, you know, whether it's as an investment or your own. So make sure you thoroughly check that property. You've got lawyers to look over the LIM reports and the council records, builders' reports and so forth. It's very important to make sure that you know what it is you're buying. And you can feel confident going ahead that you haven't, unfortunately, stepped into a nightmare.
Yeah. And, Danielle, your team can go in and do an appraisal to help someone buying and to get that finance across the line?
Absolutely, yeah. We provide complimentary appraisals for new business, our sales agents, for anyone requiring one, Yeah.
Brilliant. Where do things stand at the moment with pets? Is pets a good thing to, or to, for landlords, I guess, investors, to offer their property available for pets? I know the pet bond's not in yet, but it's coming.
Absolutely. Yeah, we find you have a larger pool of tenants looking with pets. I mean, New Zealand families, a lot of us do have pets, so you're just closing the door if you're saying straight out no. So having that option to decide based on an application can really open the chances to having an amazing tenant.
What do you suggest somebody does who has pets to kind of sell them over the line? Like, there's talk of, you know, having a pet CV with references. Is it literally that?
Yeah, I would say owners as well as property managers really like to see the pet CVs, because we pretty much put a face to a name, so you see the pet with the family, and it's really lovely. Unfortunately, some owners have been really, really hurt by tenants with pets, with a lot of damages and things like that, so it's understandable that there would be some cause for concern, but we always add additional clauses to tenancy agreements and things like that for any tenancy with a pet.
And you know, we've had people in here before say that if you can get a good tenant with a pet, they'll actually stay longer because they know how hard it is to find another place.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You raised that point when I was last in the studio with you, Stephen, and it's something I must admit, because I don't work on the property management side, that made sense completely, which is if you can get a really good tenant with a pet, they know it can be a little bit harder to get a property because of the, you know, many of them being restricted to no pets, which often means they're amazing tenants because they don't want to risk losing their property. Yep. So they become the perfect tenants because they really do want to their owners to be happy that they're there and they're looking after the property well.
Totally.
So, yeah.
I never forget when I was a property manager trying to convince this owner that, you know, this family seemed so lovely and that they had a dog, and I think the name was Fluffy or something similar, and I was like, you know, it's going to be a poodle or something. And the landlord was sitting in front of me going, oh, as long as it's not like a pit bull or anything. I said, well, we've texted them and asked them to send a photo, and we kept talking. Next minute, my email goes off. It was the most terrifying looking pit bull I've ever seen, called Fluffy. And I was like, oh, this couldn't have gone worse. Mm. But I guess because you as property managers have got to feel comfortable to go and visit the property with a pet or a dog on site.
Absolutely.
What's the rules around that? Do they have to lock it up or have it away when you're visiting?
Exactly. So when we notify a tenant of their upcoming routine inspection, they then know to ensure their dogs their dog is put away, and it's mentioned in their dog condition, say, that's added to the tenancy agreement, that is a condition for them having a dog.
Strangest pet you've ever had to sort of sign up a form for? Are we just talking goldfish, cats and dogs here, or have you had anything a bit odd?
No, I haven't.
I had a talking parrot once.
I did have an application worth 13 pets.
13?
So, yeah, unfortunately, they were declined.
I used to find it odd when I'd be marketing homes in suburban residential, you know, Auckland, and you'd have properties with chickens running loose and stuff. You sort of felt like you're out in the country, and it just seemed quite odd. But some people still like free-range eggs.
Absolutely. Yeah. How do you think we choose, or investors should choose, the right salesperson to sell their home or help them find one? And I'm going to ask you in a second, how do you choose the right property manager? You can't just say you. Like, what sort of, I guess, what attributes? Because you mentioned before, this is about building a relationship to sell or buy one of your biggest purchases you will ever purchase. How do we make sure we're getting the right person to do it?
Well, I think if you're an investor owner and you're looking to sell, I guess I'll talk about that first, sell one of your investment properties, it is important to engage with an agent or a licensee, a salesperson who's got some experience in that field, because there's a bit more to it. You have to form a really good working relationship with the tenant, because often, you know, you're going to need their cooperation around viewings and open homes, and just being that really gentle liaison. They still need their peaceful living there while you're marketing the home. So certainly someone that understands the nuances around that as a salesperson is essential. So an excellent communicator, I would say. There's going to be lots of communication going on when you're selling a tenanted property, marketing a tenanted property. Yeah, that was one of the key learnings I found when I was still selling real estate, was it's quite a specialised part of real estate, is selling tenant properties with tenants still in place. Mm. That's the key thing. You know, there's just a lot more to consider. And even in terms of the contract for sale, there's obviously all the tenancy law stuff. We have to make sure that we're allowing enough time before settlement for, you know, notice to vacate if that's what the new owner wants to do. So, yeah, technical understanding of real estate law and tenancy law as well is pretty important.
Can you sell a property with a tenant still on a fixed term and they just remain in there?
Yes.
Yeah. How does that work?
So basically the tenant would be notified that their property is going to be listed for sale, and that a sales agent will be in touch to arrange open homes and things like that, and they'd be reassured that they would be in situ until the end of their fixed term, and only then would it end at the end of their fixed term if they're issued 90 days notice to vacate before then, because the property is sold with vacant possession.
But if you have an investor buyer, that can be a huge advantage. They've got an in-place tenant.
Instant
income.
They
just take over the ownership on settlement and the rent comes to them. We effectively just change the ownership details on that property and away they go.
And that's happening often at the moment.
So what do you think makes a good property manager? How do you choose the right one?
Well, you definitely need a knowledgeable expert, somebody with experience, I think, because with the laws ever changing all the time, it would be really easy to get caught up doing something incorrectly that could potentially lead to substantial fines. So it would be hard for the general person, I would imagine, to keep up, because we're constantly reviewing everything and making sure we're on top of everything and keeping everyone protected. So somebody that's friendly and approachable, knows the area well and is a great communicator. So we know exactly what you want from us. And
I know if I owned a home as an investment owner, which I'm not, I would definitely hand that over to professional management. Mm. There's just too much to know within all the legislation, regulation around owning, you know, rental properties now. It's scary. And you can just offload all of that concern, and because your professional managers are there to know all those things and make sure everything complies. And
absolutely. We're nearly out of time.
Okay.
Christmas approaching. Do you get a break, Danielle, or does property management tick on?
Yes, I'm very grateful to get to spend some time with my family over the Christmas break. We're closed down for the, you know, general public holidays and things like that, but there'll be a member of staff on for the days in between, and essentially for urgent matters, you know, we can pick something up. But no, I'm very much looking forward to my break. I'm hosting Christmas this year at my house. So
nice.
Very exciting.
Got the recipes ready?
Yeah.
Excellent. Tony?
Yeah. Usually we try and get out of Auckland. This year my wife's a laboratory scientist at Auckland Hospital, so she's needing to be on shift. So we've sort of got to hang around Auckland a little bit longer than we normally would. But very good friends of ours invited us out to a batch on Waiheke for sort of the few days either side of New Year's Eve. So very much looking forward to getting out on the island and having some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully summer is kind to you. Well, thank you both so much for coming on and being a returning visitor, Tony. If you want to get in touch with Tony or Danielle and the team, have a look at barfoot.co.nz/teattitude. And I wish you both all the best for the Christmas season.
Thank you, Stephen, and Merry Christmas to you too.
Thank you. And as we approach our end show for 2024, we just want to say a few thank yous. First of all, to Barfoot & Thompson for sponsoring the show throughout the year. To the fabulous team here at Planet FM, especially Christine, Joe, Michelle and Paul. Thanks for everything you do to make sure that our podcast can get out straight after the show. To Tony and Matt, who have done all our marketing for the last couple of years, and all our snippets and posts that you see out there, they've actually closed their doors last week. So we say a big thank you to them for all their work, and we'll look forward to working with a new team in the new year. To Paul and our design team at Barfoot & Thompson, thank you for everything you do to create all the graphics we need to put this show to air. It's not just about turning up and doing radio. To fabulous young Adam, who edits all our shows that you're going to be listening to over the next few weeks on your summer break. You can download from Spotify, Apple, Samsung Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you love to get them. And to our 41 guests that have come in over the year, thank you for giving up the time to share your expertise. But most of all, to you, our listeners, for tuning in, for commenting, for sending us messages. We really appreciate it. Have a fabulous Christmas break and New Year. We'll catch you again in February. Take care.